The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 63. The White House Movie Theater was originally a coat room, and during his 4 years, Jimmy Carter watched 480 movies there, more than any other president. Wow, he must really love popcorn. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Sherry, and whether this is your first time listening or whether you have been making us a part of your weekly routine for the last year and a half, I want to say thank you for joining us today and for making us the number one rated travel podcast on iTunes. We are in week two of Podcast Gluttony. We will be releasing for the month of September one episode every single weekday, Monday through Friday, for 22 shows in all. If you like it, please let us know. You can email me at trav@extrapackofpeanuts.com. You can leave us a review on iTunes. You can subscribe to our channel on iTunes or on Stitcher. We want to know that you like Podcast Gluttony. And if you do, we're going to continue it into October and into the future. So please let us know if you've been liking these daily podcasts as opposed to the weekly podcast, which we have been doing before. Today's episode is chock full of information, and it is going to save you a lot of time, a lot of stress, and a lot of headaches, because one of the most common things that I get asked about by travelers is passports and visas. What countries do I need visas for? How much does it cost? Where can I get it? How should I get it? How do I apply? All those types of questions, and it's ever changing. So I'm very happy to have on Pete Gulas and Steve Gempler, who are the co-founders of AlliedPassports.com. They are the experts. They know all the ins and outs of visas, of passports, and everything like that. So we decided to sit down. We came up with a list of about 10 to 15 of the most commonly asked questions when it comes to visas and passports. And today, they are going to give you the answers to those questions. So there's a lot of information on here that even I didn't know. Like I said, it's constantly changing. So you're definitely going to want to listen to this. You do not want to be the person who gets to a country, realizes they need a visa, and then has to hop on the very next plane out and pay a lot of money to get kicked out of a country because you don't have the right visa, you don't have the right paperwork. So Steve and Pete are going to tell you everything you need to know about passports and visas. They're also going to give you a lot of cool travel tricks and tips that they've learned from traveling all over the world, and some funny travel stories, including Pete, who wasn't able to get back into his own country of America and why that happened. Also, at the end of the episode, they're going to tell you about a special discount only for Extra Pack of Peanuts listeners and readers. So you want to hang on until the end of the episode. Some awesome information. So let's roll right into this interview with Steve and Pete from AlliedPassports.com. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today are the two men who made sure I was able to get into China and who always have the answers to my visa and passport questions, Peter Gulas and Steve Gempler, co-founders of Allied Passports. Guys, thanks so much for coming on the show and welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I know today's show is going to be a hit because passports and visas are certainly a hot button topic, probably one of the most confusing aspects of international travel. And I've got a lot of questions for you guys that'll help clear things up. But before we get started with those questions, can you guys just give us a brief background of Allied Passports and what it is that you do at Allied Passports?
What we do at Allied Passport is we try to make it as easy as possible for people to get through the tangle of international travel. We help people get their passports. More importantly, we help them get their visas. We actually go to the embassies in person. There's no calling on the customer's part or anything like that. We figure it out for them, make sure it happens, and more importantly, make sure the embassy doesn't lose anything along the way.
Great. And you mentioned visas then, and visas are a little more complicated than passports. I think most people listening will know, okay, I have to get a passport if I want to go internationally, and you know, I have to re-up it every 10 years and things like that. So first, what is a visa and why do some countries require them?
A visa is actually, just so you understand it better, is actually a, a Latin word that means to see the truth. That means the embassy has looked at all the documents and they said, oh, this sounds true. We're going to go ahead and give them permission to enter. The reason why countries want visas is that it's a way to regulate and standardize foreigners coming into a country, number one. Number two, it's a way to collect revenue. While someone's in a country, you say like, well, geez, I'm staying at a hotel, paying for it, eating out, paying for that. But you're also using the fire department, the police department, the sewer, and the water. Some of that money does go towards infrastructure.
And then, so with visas, you know, some countries make you get visas in advance while others don't. I think you broke down why they want you to get a visa. Can you break down then the three ways to get a visa?
There's currently three ways to get a visa. Number one is the traditional way. You submit documents, we submit it to the embassy, and the passport comes back with a sticker or a stamp and it says good to go. Another way is electronically, and that one is in flux right now. In some countries, it's kind of a hybrid system where you do part online, and but you still got to submit your documents. Others do it, you do part online. Then when you're at the airport, they fingerprint you and give you entry. And then the third way is to have the visa waived. And if you've ever been to France or United Kingdom, you experience that. You do need a visa to go to those countries. However, those countries do waive the visa for certain nationalities. The price for the visa shows up on your airline ticket.
Okay, very interesting. So you have the countries that you need a visa to, but that they waive so you can enter without doing any work ahead of time. Then you have the ones that you can get electronically. Now, am I right in remembering that Australia is one that you can do like an e-visa with?
That's right. Australia, essentially, it's $20, and you just go online just like you're signing up for a Facebook account. You put in your information, you know, you put in your passport number, pay the $20, and it'll give you a little receipt that says you're good to go. You're ready to enter Australia. And of course, it'll also give an expiration for that visa. And after the expiration, obviously, you'll need to reapply.
And I remember thinking when I did that for Australia the first time, that was the first e-visa I had done, and I was pretty nervous. I thought, is this actually legit? You know, I mean, I know it's through their government and things, but I thought, am I going to have to do anything on the other side? So with those e-visas, you know, you sign up online. Is there usually something that you have to do when you enter the country? Because I don't exactly remember how we did it, but I thought this is pretty easy, almost too easy.
Not at all. When you go through immigration, they'll scan your passport and the passport numbers that immigration sees links to that e-visa, and they'll wave you through.
Very cool. And other than Australia, are there any other major countries that people will travel to where they can do this e-visa? Obviously, we're talking for United States citizens here.
Sure. Just in the last, 4 or 5 months now, Turkey has decided to go all e-visa. So it's $25. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's $25, and everyone must have a visa to enter now beforehand.
These e-visas are all beforehand then, correct? You have to sign up. Can it be like the day before? Is there a certain time limit usually?
Yeah, no, it can be hours before. In fact, Australia ETAs, some airlines offer that, where you go and check in and say, oh, you don't have your e-visa yet, and they will actually do it while you're being checked in.
For a nice upcharge, of course.
Oh, of course.
Right. Of course. Everyone has to make money in this process. So you have the wave visas, so you don't have to worry about it. You have the e-visas. Then you have ones that you can get on arrival. I believe we did that in Cambodia. Can you discuss those a little bit? Because to me, it just seemed like, okay, this is just basically a money-making process at that point.
It can be. A lot of times, it's not just money-making, but take a small country, like Cambodia is pretty small. They're not represented all over the world. They maybe have 10 embassies worldwide, so they can't really process all the visas. And there's not any high risk in most of the travelers. It's a small country. People come and go anyway. But that's the usual reason you'll see that visa upon.
Oh, okay.
They don't have universal representation. Like the United States has an embassy in all 279 countries.
Right. See, there, my critical mind, of course, I'm thinking it's just money. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then the on-arrival visas, if you could just discuss the process. I mean, they're basically like they sound, but if you guys want to go through, you know, what someone should do when they're going to a country like Cambodia, where you get a visa upon arrival.
Sure. For Cambodia, essentially, you just show up, give them your passport, pay the $25, $20, and that's it. They wave you through. However, there are a lot of other countries, such as Zambia and Zimbabwe, where you do have to give them a lot of paperwork beforehand. You'll need to prove that you have a hotel reservation, yellow fever vaccinations, onward tickets. They don't want you staying in their country for too long. What else do they need?
They also would need proof of financial ability. And what they mean is a bank statement. They want to see a bank statement with something other than $12.18 on it.
And for some countries, it could be as simple as just showing a credit card.
Okay. All right. So on arrival visas, then you kind of run the gamut from being super easy. Like we said, Cambodia, you just show up, you pay them $20. I remember it like going down the line of like 15 people looking at it, but no one really checking anything, I don't think. And then at the end, you know, they hand it back to you. And Indonesia is the same way, you pay $20-25. And then there's other countries, like you mentioned, that you're going to have to do some preparation before you get, even though you have to get, you get it on arrival, you have to bring stuff with you.
Right. And the other problem that, and there are some countries that have fallen in, the on arrival fee fluctuates wildly. And you are kind of stuck at that point. You're going to pay whatever he says. I mean, I've heard fees as high as $1,000.
Where was that? Do you remember?
Burkina Faso.
Okay.
You don't get, probably get many people going there. Tanzania, that one goes all over the place, and it has to do with U.S. reciprocity fees. We charge Tanzanians an additional $500 to come here. Somehow it gets screwed up in the translation, so when Americans go there, they pay their $50 on arrival fee plus someone over there adds a $500 reciprocity fee. I don't know what you do if you say you don't have the money. I have a feeling that you will be deported.
Okay, so be very careful, even if it is a visa on arrival, because the only countries I've experienced have been the easy ones, and I actually didn't know that. So even if it is an on arrival one, make sure you know ahead of time what you have to bring and be prepared, you know, for a big fee. Then the last one we talk about, and probably the hardest one to get, or at least the most, you know, painful to get, is the one that you have to get in advance. And that's countries like China, like Brazil. What is that process like, and what type of things do people need to provide?
Most all countries want to see that you need visa in advance. Three basic things always, and that's passport, photo, and application. Application just simply being the request for visa. And that it becomes a legal document at that point. They're also looking for who they're letting in. China's a great example. If you put down that you're a member of the clergy, a missionary, something like that, you got to remember China's still a communist country, no religion. They view it as a political issue, so someone has to decide to become creative or make an additional letter saying they promise not to be religious while they're in China. And then all countries want to see usually some other supporting documents, usually a flight itinerary. Some want even more than that. Like I said, China, if there's some exception, they'll want further support. But the application, photo, passport, that's the three basic. We always got to have that.
And how long then does the process typically take? We're talking to China. If you want to mention a few other of the big countries, and we'll get into that a little later, but just a few of the big countries that need you to apply in advance and you actually have to get your visa in advance, so China, India, stuff like that. How long does that process take?
So each country has different processing times, and each country also offers different levels of service. Some countries offer rush. Some countries offer no less than 2 weeks processing. It really depends on what they offer and what the customer is willing to pay. So, for example, China has a 24-hour visa that you can obtain for $160, whereas their standard service is $140. Brazil, it's about 2 weeks processing. For whatever reason, they decided they're not going to offer a rush service, even though they could make a heck of a lot more money. That's just how they do it. So you really have to abide by their processing times. If you have a trip 3 days from now and you want to go to Brazil, good luck to you.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons for me I wasn't able to go, amongst a myriad of other reasons. We were never in an area long enough to wait out the processing time to go and get the Brazilian visa. So now we're talking about the visas that you have to get ahead of time, and there's kind of two subsets of that, right? One that I could send in to the embassy or the consulate, and then they would send it back to me, so I don't ever have to go anywhere. I can just do it myself if I wanted to. And then there's the other process where it actually has to get hand-delivered. And I know China and Brazil are both like this. Are there other ones? And can you talk about the process for either of them, the hand-delivered and then the one obviously you can just send in the mail?
Sure. Kenya is a good example of that, where you can simply USPS your documents straight to the Kenyan embassy in Washington. They'll review everything, and more than likely you'll be providing a return envelope anyway. So it's pretty straightforward. There are some countries such as, like you mentioned, China and Brazil, for whatever reason, whether it's security, they don't want, you know, random packages showing up at their front steps of the embassy, that sort of thing. They only let you hand deliver documents to their visa offices.
And what's unique about that is those documents have to be hand-delivered, but they can be delivered by anyone, correct?
Anyone off the street, exactly.
And that's kind of where you guys come in then. Backtracking a little bit then, if I wanted the Kenyan visa, who would I send it into? Would I always send it into Washington, D.C.? Does it matter where you live? Are there different places that, you know, depending on where you live in the United States or wherever you're resident, you send it to, or is it always one main hub?
You can always send it to Washington with the exception of China and Brazil. They're what's called jurisdictional. And what those countries do, they have an embassy here in Washington and maybe a half dozen consulates throughout the United States. They carve the United States up into territories. So if you live in Houston, for example, you would not be able to apply for that visa in Washington. You would send it to the consulate in Houston. The reason for that is, and if you think upon it, is if you got a speeding ticket in Tennessee, you can't ask that case to be moved to Pennsylvania. The limitations of law end at those borders. Same thing with an embassy. All embassies have jurisdiction. Those are the only two, China and Brazil, that really strictly enforce it. Really strict. India, too.
India as well, correct?
They're real strict.
Okay.
Way around it.
And China and Brazil have to be hand-delivered, and then that's, like I said, that's kind of where you guys come in. Let's say I lived in Philadelphia, and my example was with China when Allied Passports helped me get a Chinese visa. You know, I lived in Philadelphia. I didn't want to drive down to Washington, D.C. I didn't, you know, hand-deliver my passport. I didn't know anyone in Washington, D.C. I wasn't going to probably send it through the regular mail anyway to just, you know, a friend, because probably not reliable if they're my friends. So then you guys come in, and how does that work? Because anyone can hand deliver it. So what would the process be for someone who said, all right, I want a Chinese visa, or I want a Brazilian visa, but I don't have time to go to the embassy myself and hand deliver it?
Sure. We would accept that application. It would just come in the mail, and we'd review it, make sure everything is correct. Each embassy is very finicky in how they want paperwork processed, in terms of the order, how they want their passport photos stapled to their application, just silly stuff like that. But if you don't have it right, they're going to send you packing and say, come back the next day. So to clarify on this, Travis, also, China is one of those embassies that technically is jurisdictional. However, in Washington, D.C., they let that slide a little bit. So in terms of Allied Passport, we can accept applications everywhere from Alaska to California to where you are in Pennsylvania.
Okay. And then, so you also kind of offer, I remember, the service as well, not just hand delivering it, but you'll take a look at it when it gets sent to make sure that everything is in order before actually wasting your own time and my time and everyone's time and delivering it and getting it sent back. So you do kind of look through them, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, but we'll review everything. And if it's an easy fix, we'll likely do it ourselves. You know, if we see that your passport number is off by one digit, we'll just do the first page and submit it that way. Otherwise, if, you know, you forget your signature, or some people even forget sending in their passport, you know, you wouldn't think that would be an issue, but, you know, we'll certainly send an email immediately and say, please send whatever we need.
Yeah. And that's really cool, because you do have that peace of mind. A lot of times people might be up against the time crunch as well. So it's nice to have another person review it before then them putting it in, it getting sent back from the embassy, and then having to do the whole process over again. Overall, what are some of the most popular countries then that people travel to that they need to get a visa for? Because I'm sure a lot of people listening are like, all right, well, this all sounds easy enough, right? Like they're kind of pulling the veil back on visas. But what countries do I actually need a visa for?
The most popular visa on earth is a China visa. One out of every three visas written on this planet is a Chinese visa. That one is probably number one. Number two is probably India right now. That's a very difficult visa, not because of the requirements, but because they're unbelievably picky down to abbreviations of avenue. They don't like that.
Yeah, we had Brian Kelly, the points guy, actually, he does his visas with us as well. And on his application, he put 123 Northwest Avenue as opposed to 123 Northwest AVE as it's written on his driver's license. So they rejected it based off of that solely. And unfortunately, we had to have him do that application, re-sign it, reship it to us, and then it was submitted successfully. So it really is, each embassy has their quirks, and you got to abide by those quirks.
So we have China, we have India as two very popular ones. Then most South American countries also require visas, correct?
No. Oh. No, it's only Brazil that really is the most difficult one. Paraguay and Bolivia require a visa, but they're relatively easy.
And you can get on arrival.
Right.
Oh, okay. What about Argentina?
No, you just pay $131 reciprocity fee. That's what we charge most foreigners to come to the United States. So they kind of figure what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And they like nice, crisp bills when you get paid, when you pay them.
So it's not exactly a visa then. You're just paying. Now, is that when you pay?
It is a visa.
Okay. So.
Yeah, they stamp it at the airport.
Okay. So you don't have to get ahead of time, but it's stamped at the airport then.
Consider an entry fee, your ticket to the baseball game.
Okay. Are there any countries, and you've mentioned some that are hardest countries to get a visa for, India because they're super picky. Are there any countries that actually limit the number of visas they give out, meaning you might get turned away if they've hit their quota of whatever Americans coming in their country for that year or month or whatever?
There's only one country on earth that does that right now, and that is the United States. So your people would not be affected. But we do limit the number of visas we issue and the type of visas issued.
Okay, so everyone should be okay as long as, you know, they fill out their paperwork all right and things like that. They shouldn't figure that they won't get a visa for a country as long as the process goes smoothly then.
Correct. Yeah, it's very, very rare that we actually see an outright refusal of visa. Mm-hmm. It's really rare.
Okay. What are some of the biggest mistakes then that people make during the visa process? Like, what is something that would get them either refused? And you kind of mentioned a few there, but what are some things that might get them refused? Or what are some things that people do that then, you know, they mess up, they don't get their visa in time, things like that?
I see every once in a while where someone was to that country before and one of two things happened. Either they went there to protest the government, and these governments do keep track of that, or they overstayed their visa. That is a quick way to be told you're not welcome back in the foreseeable future. And they do keep track of that. Some of these countries are very, you wouldn't imagine some third world countries to be that sophisticated, but they are.
Okay. Do you happen to see a lot of people then who are on too tight of a schedule to get visas? Is that another common problem that most people have? And how far out in advance can you get a visa? Let's say I have a trip to Brazil for a year from now. Is it possible to get a visa that far in advance?
Yeah. Yeah, it is for a lot of countries. In the case of Brazil, they issue to Americans a 10-year visa. So it's perfectly all right to do that. I recommend people wait till they're 90 days out at the earliest. The reason for that is the world is a forever changing place. Look what's happening in West Africa right now. I mean, you know, you could go ahead and pay all this money for a visa and stuff just to find out that it maybe not prudent to go right now.
Okay, so 90 days out would give you enough time for almost any country to look at your visa application, give it back to you. You guys, if they're using a visa service, send it back. 90 days is plenty of time then.
I always like the example that Peter gives about, you know, you get an email from a tour group that says 80% off Brazilian cruises if you book in the next 24 hours, the trip's next week. And then, of course, they pay $3,500 for this cruise and they can't get the visa on time.
And then I assume that the cruise company says, you know, it's not our fault. You don't have the right paperwork to come.
Tough luck. Non-refundable. That's what the 80% discount was all about.
Actually, one of my jobs in the past was to actually be a visa policeman for major cruise lines where I'd meet them at the boat and I'd have to go through their passport. There was always $400 or $500 that we couldn't let board.
Wow. Yeah. So make sure. Yeah, I think that's a good time frame. I'm glad you mentioned that the 90 days out will be enough. But it also gives you the wiggle room in case, you know, you end up not being able to go to that country or, you know, like you said, it's not prudent to go to that country or some things happen. 90 days out is when people should start looking to then get their visas. As far as visas, we should mention, too, each country is different on the visas that they'll give in terms of how long you can stay, right?
Yes. all countries have in common a minimum of 30 days, pretty much. Anything longer, a stay longer than 30 days. And don't confuse length of stay with validity. Two separate ideas on a visa. One will give an expiration date. That's called validity. That means the visa is good to that day. You can enter on that last day and still stay the specified number of days on the visas. It almost never exceeds 30 days. After 30 days, you get into becoming a resident. That's a different animal. So when I see people saying they're going to go stay in a country for a year as a tourist, no, you're not. You're becoming a resident, and that's a whole different ball of wax.
You'll either need a working visa or something else. There are a lot of countries, you mentioned this, that will only stay a certain amount of time on a tourist visa. For example, the Schengen area, which is most of Europe, especially most of Western Europe other than the UK, they only allow you to stay 90 days at a time. Are there any ways that you guys know to get around these? Not illegal ways or anything like that, but let's say someone wants to go and stay longer, you know, what can they kind of do?
Okay, what you're talking with the Schengens there, the way it works is you're allowed to come in for 90 days without a visa. If you want to stay longer, you would go to local immigration, which usually means the local police station, and they can extend up to another 90 days. You have to leave at the end of that 180 days, and you cannot reenter any of the Schengen states for one full year.
Okay. And then with other Schengen areas, if you only have the 90 day, is it that you have to leave then for another 90 days and then you can come back? So you can be there 90 days every 6 months? Is that kind of how that works?
You're allowed 180 day stay in a rolling calendar year.
Okay. So
not a calendar year, but a rolling, if you understand what I'm saying there.
Right. Like it'll start the day you enter and then 365 days from that day, you can be 180 days in the Schengen. You have to be 185 out.
You got okay. After that, you do need to get another type of visa, and it's a resident or work or student visa, something like that.
Okay. What happens if someone is already in another country and they decide they want to travel to a country that requires a visa next? So, for example, let's say I'm in Thailand and I want to travel to China. Can I get a visa for China while I'm in Thailand? And if so, you know, where should I go? What steps should I take? Is it the same as what I do in the U.S. or is it completely different?
It's pretty much the same as it is in the U.S. on one important condition. When you enter Thailand, hopefully they stamped your passport with an entry stamp. A lot of times that doesn't happen. I'm sure it's happened to you where you go in a country and they just go on ahead. Make sure you get your passport stamped. That's what shows that you are in that country. Otherwise, jurisdiction becomes an issue. Why are you applying in Bangkok for a China embassy when you live in Seattle, Washington, United States? It raises every red flag possible.
Okay, so as long as you get your passport stamp when you enter that country, then you can say, well, I'm getting it in Bangkok because I entered into Thailand and here's where I am at this moment.
Exactly, and it's still at the discretion of the embassy, maybe that council. And a council is who heads up a visa section of an embassy. He might just feel uncomfortable with it altogether and say no. There are other solutions to those problems, though. I don't know if you know it, but Americans are allowed to have two passports. So if they're traveling overseas on one passport, they could just send us the second passport. We'll get the visa, FedEx it to Bangkok, and off you go.
Okay, yeah, and that's one thing that I haven't done yet, but I've gotten to the point where I think it might be prudent for me to do. How does that work, getting a second passport? Let's just touch on that a little bit. Is it hard, or is it basically you just say, I need a second passport because I travel a lot?
But that puts it in a nutshell. Of course, the government has a form for it. You fill it out, new photos, submit your primary 10-year passport, and with a letter saying, I travel a whole lot, and I need to get these visas, and blah, 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 and I promise to take care of the passport.
And that second passport is only valid for 2 years. It's not another 10-year passport that you already have.
Okay, so that's done well before your other one expires, probably, unless you're getting it late into the life of your first passport.
More than likely.
Correct. So, you know, but it can get you out of binds if you travel a lot. There's a lot of travelers that they actually do that. They just have passports flying around the world all the time.
Okay. And then, so back to the example a little bit where, you know, you're in Thailand and you want to get a Chinese visa. and you're an American, you would then go to the Chinese embassy in Thailand, correct? So let's say you're, I assume the only one in Thailand's in Bangkok, but I would actually go to the Chinese embassy. I wouldn't go to the U.S. embassy or anything like that. They would have nothing to do with it, right?
Exactly. That's correct. And I've done that several times, and I simply do a Google search, Chinese embassy in Bangkok, and then show up at their address.
Something to keep in mind, do that. Remember, when you're overseas in Bangkok, for example, and you as an American, do not expect to go in the Chinese embassy and find anyone that speaks English. It might be Thai or Chinese. English would be a distant third.
Right, right. Yeah, that's...
I'm going to take a buddy that knows English and local language.
Right, that's a great point. And then is the price... I've heard this, but I don't know if it's true. It might just be like an old wives' tale. Are the prices different? Like, let's say I got a Chinese visa in Thailand. Would that be cheaper than getting a Chinese visa in the U.S.? Would it be more expensive, or is it always the same no matter what country I'd be in?
In theory, for China, it should be the same as if you got it in the United States. There are some countries, though, it's just they charge $20 a visa, one size fits all type of thing. And there you go, off you go.
Okay. And if you arrive in a country, and I know this probably has happened to some people, hopefully not you guys, not to me yet, but a friend of mine, if you arrive in a country that you need a visa for, and she flew from Spain to Brazil, and she was Canadian, so it works fairly similar to what, like the United States, and she did not have a Brazilian visa. So she got on the plane, she got there. You know, what happens to someone then, and do they have any options?
No, they don't. If they're going to for a country like Brazil, for example, hopefully the airline stopped them before they boarded if they didn't have a visa.
In theory, they should always check that.
Those airlines, by the way, that do that are fined substantially. And it's not just a $100 fine. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars. Usually what happens is the immigration department at that airport will put them on the first flight back to the United States, which they're charged for. And hopefully their passport is only marked refusal of entry, not deported.
Okay. Yeah, and that is exactly what happened to her. They held her in, you know, she couldn't go anywhere. They held her, and then they said, you're getting on the next flight back to Canada. And she had to pay, you know, whatever that flight cost, she had to pay it. So very, very expensive, costly mistake. So the main takeaway I think that we can, you know, agree on here is that you should make sure you have your visas in order before heading to a country. Is there somewhere that people can see a list of countries they need a visa for, and then broken down, you know, if they have to get on arrival, and if so, what they have to bring, if they have to get ahead of time, or if they can get an e-visa?
Sure. We have two sources that we recommend. Obviously, first is our website. You can find pretty much everything you could ever need right there. Applications, the whole process is right on there for you. However, for the most up-to-date and most detailed information on what's going to happen once you get there, whether it's visa on arrival or in advance, I would recommend going to the State Department website. And anytime I go to a country, I simply do a Google search, a generic Google search for State Department travel and then the country that I'm going to. It'll take you right to the consular affairs section, and it has everything from how many passport pages you need to enter the country to whether or not you need the visa, what to expect in line at the airport, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, great. And yeah, if you guys are listening to this podcast, we will link that in the show notes. So that'll be right there for you, both those resources, both Allied Passport's website, as well as then the State Department's website. So if you're unsure, make sure that you're always checking that. And like Steve said, you can easily just Google it. That'll probably return a number of hits that'll give you an idea of what you need before you go. Now, we're not going to get let you guys out of here without touching on your travels a little bit, because you've both done a fair bit of it yourself. What are a few of your favorite places or travel experiences that you both have had?
I spent a lot of time in East Africa, and I recommend that to anybody. If you want to go out and just, most beautiful weather on earth, nice and warm days, nice cool nights, wonderful people.
And I lived in Cairo for a year, so I had a really nice time. I was studying Middle Eastern history and Islamic history. So I was all throughout Egypt. Cairo is kind of my second home, or at least that's what I say to impress people.
Great.
Yeah. One other place I always recommend is some of the smaller cities in Canada. I don't think people give Ottawa and Quebec City justice. You know, take a weekend trip to Halifax. There's a lot more nonstops out of Philadelphia and DC, New York than you'd think.
Yeah, well, my friend from Ottawa will be very happy to be listening to that. Getting some love, I think the first time on the podcast. So you're right. A lot of people don't give much credit to that. One of my favorite questions to ask guests on the show is about their kind of travel mistakes that they've made or travel mishaps. And with you guys on, I can share that, you know, I got stuck in Singapore because I didn't have enough pages in my passport to go down to Indonesia, even though I tried to tell the Singapore Airlines employee that, don't worry, it's Indonesia. I'm sure they'll let me in. I can pay them off. You know, they did their job as the airline and they wouldn't let me on. And they kept telling me, we're getting fined tens of thousands of dollars if you get turned away. So that was a whole debacle. That was one of my biggest travel mistakes because, you know, I never even gave it a second thought. Do you guys have any experiences that stick out in your mind as something you did, either a mistake or a mishap that happened to you that obviously turned out okay in the end?
I was once deported from the United States.
All right. Well, let's hear that story.
It was one of those deals that was going from coming back from the Bahamas where in the day you only needed like a driver's license essentially to come back into the U.S. Well, I had all that, but didn't satisfy the immigration official, so I was deported back to Nassau and had to get a reentry visa to the United States.
Well, I guess there's worse places to be sent back to.
Well, there are, but I had to spend 2 days there because everyone was at the beach at the embassy there. I could never get them.
Oh, that's pretty wild. Steve, what about you? Have you had any of those type of experiences?
Sure. I was in Alexandria, Egypt, and one of my friends, my close friends at the time, wanted to see the El Alamein battlegrounds in the northern part of Egypt. So we got on a bus without any bathrooms, one of these rickety buses that you pay £4, you know, the equivalent of a dollar, and we got about 3 hours into this journey, and we can see the sign that says, El Alamein, stop here. And the bus just whizzed by, even though it said it was going to stop. Apparently, you had to tell the driver in advance. And unfortunately enough, my Arabic wasn't good enough to say we'd like to stop at El Alamein. So we ended up in Marshamatru, which was 7 hours away. And my gosh, no air conditioning, no bathrooms for 10 hours is something I'll never forget.
That paints a picture. Even the most seasoned of travelers, you know, people listening, I think, always assume that seasoned travelers have it all together. Oh, yeah, of course it works out perfect for them. And they see like Facebook pictures of everything, you know, nice and dandy. But really, there's a lot more to travel. And those are the experiences you remember and kind of the fun parts of travel, too, the unexpected.
Marshamatru was a great place. Hindsight, we had a blast in the end.
That's awesome. And we're all about teaching people how to travel more and spend less. What are a few of the ways that you guys have learned to save money while you're traveling?
Well, I was in the fortunate position that I worked for awardwallet.com for a couple of years. I still do their social media updates. So I am totally into the frequent flyer mile thing. I think I have 3 or 4 million miles right now. And, you know, pretty much any trip that I take is revolved around miles or credit card redemptions, that sort of thing. So I'm living the good life in terms of the mile blogger world. So Pete, what do you have?
I've never been good at saving money when I travel, but I can tell people how to save money with their travel documents. Don't wait to the last minute. As soon as you do that, everyone is going to take a big chunk of the pie off of your plate.
Yeah, we love it when travelers wait to the last minute because if you see our fee chart, you'll know what we're talking about.
And the embassies love it too, because they'll just sock it to them.
Yeah, it's very true. That's a great point. I mean, the earlier you can do stuff, the better. And if people know you need that, whether it be an airline ticket, you know, the day of, and it's a one way and they know you need it, they charge you, or whether it be the travel documents, as soon as you're in a bind and you need to get that, people are going to take advantage of that. So definitely get your travel documents ahead of time. Is there anything that we should be looking out for, either personally or professionally, from you guys?
In terms of filling out applications and getting proper paperwork to us or to the embassies, just read. Don't skimp over anything. Just make sure you look at everything two or three times. There's so many people that, you know, they'll see something and they'll think, oh, well, it says passport. I'll just send them a scanned copy of my passport and that'll do the trick. You know, somehow magically a visa label will end up on my passport in the end. And it's just common sense. If anyone's listening out there, just...
Well, read, and don't forget, you know, we understand that a lot of times these are really weird concepts to people. We answer our phone all the time, or an email too. Just call us. What do they mean by this? And we'll gladly answer. I'd rather see the work come in pretty much presentable than spend a week going back and forth with somebody and them incurring more FedEx charges to get us their passport a second time around. It just makes more sense to call us. It takes all of 30 seconds to answer a question. Just do it that way. And once you get the hang of it, you'll be good for life.
Yeah, and I can vouch for that as well. I had to call Steve a few times with our Chinese visas and different things, just some questions, because it was the first time I had been working with a visa service, first time I had needed a visa to go to a country beforehand, things like that. So just call them up, send them an email. These guys always respond, and it is much better to know ahead of time what you have to do and get it to them so that they can take it to the embassy and things like that. Steve and Paul, thanks, guys, so much for coming to the show. I had a great experience working with you guys on my Chinese visa. I know you've helped people all over the world, you know, sort out this complicated mess of visas and save a lot of time with your service. You're also offering Extra Pack of Peanuts listeners and readers a discount. So if you want to tell them about that and also remind people one more time where they can go to find you guys and how they can get help with their visas.
Sure. Our website is alliedpassport.com. And anytime you do an order with us, you're going to have to fill out an order form, an Allied Passport order form. And on there, you can simply write in, I was referred by Travis, Extra Pack of Peanuts, and we'll be happy to apply a discount for everyone.
Yeah, that's great, guys. And thanks again for coming on. I'll certainly be getting in touch with you as soon as I figure out when I'll be heading back to Brazil.
Sounds good, Travis.
Don't wait till the last minute.
That's right. 90 days out, I'll get a hold of you guys.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Guys, I know you've just been bombarded with a lot of great information about visas and passports. Make sure before you start traveling that you know the answers to the questions for where you're going, whether you need visas, how you can get visas, how much it's going to cost, everything like that. So if you don't remember or you don't know about the country you're going to, you can always go to alliedpassports.com. They're going to have updated information on all the countries. You can also head to the State Department's website. And if you don't remember those websites, you can go to the show notes of this show, extrapackapeanuts.com/visas passports. That's going to take you to all the show notes that we've discussed. We're going to link everything up there. Also, don't forget, if you do need a visa and you want to use a visa service, I highly recommend Allied Passports. I've used them myself for my Chinese visa. I'll be using them when I go to Brazil. They're really a great service. They're going to save you a lot of time and a lot of hassle, especially for those countries where you have to hand deliver your passport. So if you don't live near a consulate or an embassy where you have to hand deliver them, consider using Allied Passports. Make sure you use the discount code when you go to Allied Passports. You fill out the form, put in Extra Pack of Peanuts, or say I was referred by Travis at Extra Pack of Peanuts, whatever it is, write that on there. You will be getting a discount for that as well. So I highly recommend Allied Passports. And if you do have questions about visas and passports, again, please make sure you know the answers before you go, because I do not want to be hearing horror stories of you getting turned around at that country and being sent home and having to pay thousands and thousands of dollars because of that. Don't forget, let us know how we're doing with Podcast Gluttony. We're now almost 2 weeks through. Of course, you can send me an email, trav@extrapackofpeanuts.com. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe on Stitcher. You can leave us reviews on either of those. We would really, really love to hear your feedback. We want to know whether we should keep doing this, whether you love the daily show, whether you want us to go back to weekly, what shows you like, everything like that. It's for you. This show is about you. We want to give you the best travel information. So tell us how we're doing. Tell us what you like. Today's featured review is going to come from JPPISME. So I guess what that means is JPP is me. Didn't read that right the first time. So JPP is me writes, the EPOP podcast does a very good job of communicating world travel information that is both comprehensive and relevant. Travis doesn't mind digging deep to get vital information out to those of us who have yet to begin the journey. Kudos, sir. So if you also write a review on iTunes, you may be the next one to be featured. JPP is me. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today, for supporting us, for supporting Podcast Gluttony. And until tomorrow, happy free travels.